First, to a story about an Australian artist responding to the Holocaust in modern Paris. When visual artist, head of public programs and senior lecturer at the National Art School, Ella Dreyfus, left for Paris in 2013, she nervously packed a bunch of felt letters that over time would increase in poignancy.
When I was born, my grandfather held me in his warm hands. And it seems though his eyes are teary, but it's hard to tell from the old photograph. While my brother and sister danced at the feet of his tired and weathered frame. He said, there's a light to this boy I've rarely seen, and there he gave me my name.
Ella, one of the saddest things I read after the Charlie Hebdo attacks was that some Jewish people were feeling as though Paris was no longer a safe space for them. Now, can you tell me about the Paris you visited 18 months before the attacks to produce this work?
The Paris I visited was the same Paris that everybody knows, the same Paris that everybody falls in love with. And life was normal, going about its daily business when I was there.
Was there any sense of anti-Semitism?
Look, I had no experiences of it personally. It doesn't mean it wasn't going on. And as you know, a lot of the hatred is incited by people on the internet and looking at things or in small groups. So no, not in my experience. And I certainly visited a number of Jewish places, the Jewish Museum, the Holocaust Museum, the Wall of Remembrance. You know, I made it my business to actually go about and see these places. There's a famous statue of Captain Alfred Dreyfus, which we may talk about a bit later, but I've recently read that that statue is regularly defaced with anti-Semitic slogans. Natasha Lehrer wrote about that in The Guardian recently, and I certainly didn't see any evidence of that.
Well, let's talk about what you were doing there in Paris.
Well, I was having a dream come true, Melanie. I was an artist in residence for 3 months at a wonderful place called the Cité Internationale des Arts, and basically it's an artist colony where hundreds of creative people come together from around the world to a studio. And I was fortunate to have a three-month residency. And I did go there with something particular in mind, but it kind of scared me. I carry this name Dreyfus, and it's in Australia, it's not such a well-known name. It's just a name, a European origin. But certainly in France and across Europe, it's a name of great historical prominence. And I knew that. It has a long history and a history to do with anti-Semitism due to the trial of Captain Alfred Dreyfus in the late 1800s. And I went there thinking, wow, What would it be today to be a contemporary Dreyfus, to have this name and walk through the streets of Paris and proclaiming that name? And I took with me to Paris these felt letters that I'd hand-stitched in the English alphabet for a previous project, and I took them with me, almost daring myself to use them in Paris in French and make a proclamation. And I was living in this building, and it was very, very scary. It was a dark, dismal, rundown old place, up three flights of stairs and very rundown and spooky. And I started to get the vibes, and I started to feel, oh, what happened in this place? And not only, you know, what did happen really in that place, but one imagines. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a creative person, so I'm imagining what might have happened. And obviously I know the history of the Jews in Europe and Paris. Many were deported, murdered, and hidden. So I began to see these places that were very evocative and that were where the feeling of maybe of someone being hidden or someone being persecuted. And I looked in cellars and doorways and alleyways and, like I said, the stairwell I was in. And I got up the courage to pull out my letters, and I created this phrase. It said, Je m'appelle Dreyfus. My name is Dreyfus. Je suis juif. I am a Jew. And in the dead of the night, I installed them in the stairwell and photographed them there. So it was evoking the presence of the history of Jews who may or may not have been in those places. And then I gradually got more and more confident, and I went out into our courtyard in the buildings and I installed them there. And this is over days and weeks. Mm-hmm. And then bit by bit, I got more and more confident and took them out onto the islands, onto even the Senate building in Luxembourg, and, you know, into wider environments, basically making this bigger, bolder statement. And as I got more courage, you know, the work got grander.
Is this what you intended to do when you left Australia?
Well, as I said, it was my sort of secret artistic plan. Because what I find as a creative person is that I'll get these wacky ideas and I go, no, 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 no. One part of my mind says, you can't possibly do that. Don't be silly. That's a crazy idea. But the other part, the risk-taking part says, yes, yes, we must do it. So I always find with the arts, it's about having the courage to follow those risky voices, the risky ideas, and see where they take you.
Now, I want to get back to the felt letters in just a moment, but I'd love it if you could take us for a moment inside, just briefly, I guess, the court case of Alfred Dreyfus, so that we have some sort of context as to what French people would see when they were walking around and seeing these letters on the wall.
Well, Captain Alfred Dreyfus, who was a lieutenant at the time in 1894, he was accused of treason, of high treason, and accused wrongly. He was imprisoned. It was a setup. He was sent to Devil's Island off the coast of Guinea and imprisoned for many, many years. And the French military knew that it was a setup. Another major, Georges Picard, he found evidence. It all pointed to another person who'd committed the treason against the French military. And anyway, the court cases went on and on, and Captain Dreyfus was retried and still found guilty. And it grew into a worldwide case, and it split France in terms of its position on Jews, in fact. And very famous people, for example, Emile Zola, the writer, got involved and became a Dreyfusade, which was a follower of Dreyfus, and wrote a very impassioned letter called J'accuse, which was on the front page of the paper, to the military, accusing them basically of this treason and demanding that Dreyfus be tried again and freed. And it really went on for many years. It was only resolved in 1906. However, the legacy of it continues to this day, and in fact only recently, after the Charlie Hebdo massacre and the Hypercachet supermarket massacre, the French president, Prime Minister Manuel Valls, he evoked the spirit of Zola's J'accuse speech to the French Assembly only in January this year, crying out in the same voice, you know, are Jews to be hated on the streets? Do we have to hear this anti-Semitism again in Paris? What does this mean for Paris as a nation? So clearly, the Dreyfus case, the Dreyfus affair, is being evoked in the streets of Paris today. Having said all that, I wasn't only there looking at the history and the Dreyfus case. I was looking at the living Dreyfus, and I met living Dreyfus in Paris. I searched for them. I hunted for them, in fact. And I was looking at the Dreyfus who have been murdered, whose names were listed on the Wall of Remembrance in the Holocaust Museum. So actually I was encompassing the living, the dead, the history, and naturally myself, putting myself into the picture.
Who are the Dreyfus of today?
Well, the ones I met were not always that interested in meeting this Australian artist, because I didn't set out systematically to find them and knock on their doors, but I did get rather excited about the idea of, well, where are these living Dreyfuses? I've seen the list of names of those who perished, and now I want to see if there's a living spirit. And there was, so I looked them up in the Yellow Pages and the phone book, got on my push bike and went around Paris with my map, and I looked for them, and I was quite overjoyed and delighted to see so many living Dreyfuses. So there's a French handbag shop, Jerome Dreyfus. There is Louis Dreyfus, which is the big shipping company. There are there's a fabric merchant, Dreyfus Marché, up in Montmartre. So there's an attorney, you know, there are people. And I was rather excited because I grew up in Sydney, and apart from the Melbourne Dreyfuses, my cousins, we were the only Dreyfuses. I never met anyone else. I never heard of anyone else. And in fact, when I got back from Paris, I was telling my mother about all these Dreyfuses that are alive and well in Paris, and she started to cry.
Really?
Because we felt very alone. Mm-hmm. And I think because we lost our family in the Holocaust on my father's side, he and his brother survived. Their parents luckily got out a little later, which was a miracle, in 1939, just before the outbreak of war. But everyone else was lost in Auschwitz. other places that we don't even know of. So there was a great sense of homecoming. Not that my family were from Paris, but the Dreyfus name originates in the Alsace area near the border of France and Germany. So the name travelled in both directions. So it was quite enlivening and energising to have this experience.
Did you have any response from the Dreyfuses themselves about this work?
I did, actually. And funnily enough, I needed to see a GP for a medical matter and I found there was a Dr. Laurent Dreyfus. So I thought, well, what the hell? This is my part of my research. I'll make an appointment with Dr. Laurent. And I did. And naturally, we didn't talk about any of my ailments because I told him really why I'd come to see him in terms of the history and the project. And he was fascinated. And he started to tell me about his family. He had a very famous grandfather who started hospitals in Paris, looking after the poor. So, you know, that was fascinating. I also met Arnaud Dreyfus, a stockbroker, simply because I happened to sneak into the courtyard of his building trying to find evidence of Dreyfus. And he said, well, what are you doing here in this courtyard and who are you? And I always was very upfront when I was out there with my camera. People still get a little bit frightened, even of a 50-year-old Australian tourist with a camera, and they want to know what you're doing in their courtyard. So I told him about the project and he stopped and we had about a 40-minute chat and he also told me the history of his family. Likewise, a lawyer I met in her courtyard, her husband was trying to kick me out and basically take my camera off me. He was so incensed that I would be photographing in their building. She got interested as well and told me the history of her family and they also came from that region.
So these words, je m'appelle Dreyfus, je suis juif, these words, would you leave them up for very long before photographing them?
All in all, I left the words up for around 2 hours, so they weren't there very long. I call it an ephemeral art piece. So basically I was installing these letters in alleyways, gardens, buildings, walls, in the streets of Paris, and then I would photograph them. But during that time, naturally people would walk past. Mm. And sometimes they did stop to talk. My French isn't brilliant, but I could get a few sentences out. And because the building I was living in was in the Marais, which is the old Jewish quarter of Paris, it actually was very easy for those people who stopped to talk to understand when I gave a bit of the history of why I was evoking the spirit of the Jews in that area. They understood immediately.
Mm-hmm. Now, why the colours of the letters? They're almost childlike. They're very, they're the sorts of letters and colours that you might see in a daycare centre. Why did you make that choice?
Because the work is about evoking childhood trauma. And on a personal level relates to the trauma that my father and his brother went through as children leaving Germany, being expelled basically and surviving. However, The childhood letters, what they do is they attract the attention of the viewer and the audience because they are colourful and playful and people go, oh, and they have an upbeat response and they think it's something playful and lovely. And then when they get closer and read what it is and see where it's installed, suddenly it drops down to another level of understanding. And really it was very much for me about what happens in the home, what happens in a childhood like a neighbourhood, that suddenly becomes unsafe. So I really was examining how places and homes for children can become destabilised in times of war and, in fact, wondering what might have happened to those children and how they got hidden, what happened to their lives.
So, Ella, if we fast forward now 18 months after you produced these works, and we've had the Charlie Hebdo attacks, and the hashtag used around the world was Je suis Charlie. Now, this must have really resonated with you, I'd imagine.
I was really surprised. I was really shocked because I thought immediately of the work I had just done the year before. And not only did Je suis Charlie take off around the world with massive demonstrations in Paris, other places, but other hashtags started appearing, and there was a call put out to claim Je suis Juif as a tag. And je suis arabe, and on it went. So this sort of declaration of selfhood, of identity, of religion, it really did sweep the world just this year, January and February. And I thought, wow, I made a very prescient work there. I had no idea at the time. I was operating from a very intuitive artistic perspective, And yet somehow this work has tapped into the zeitgeist of what is going on right now.
So the work's now in an online gallery on your website, which our listener can access anytime they like. How do you think it should be interpreted now, post Charlie Hebdo Paris?
Well, certainly I don't want the work to be seen as something that's jumping on a bandwagon. And given that I made it 18 months earlier, I think it's very interesting for people to see, well, what was this one artist, this Australian in Paris, doing that captured the spirit of what came afterwards? I'm over 50 and I have spent probably my whole life wondering how as an artist one does respond, one does represent the Holocaust and what happened to Jews. And I've thought about it for 20 or 30 years, and I didn't really know I was going to do this in Paris, but when I was there and it all started bubbling up, I thought, wow, I have found a way to representation of what may have happened in these actual places. So it's about responding to a place that I happened to be in at the time, and also having a lot of feelings coming up. You know, I was very frightened, I was excited, I was energized, I was out in the streets. I was really on a mission, and I think that it's a universal mission for anyone of the second generation whose parents or grandparents, third generation, have been through massive traumas, and that could include most people in Australia, let's face it, from wherever they came from. You know, to get to a point where I'm living in a safe place, my life in Sydney, Australia, is not under threat. Jews here are not threatened, or other nations, other nationalities and ethnicities. So I can come from a place of safety to then go down a level and explore deeper things that happened to my family and their generation.
Ella Dreyfus, thank you so much for being on Books and Arts.
My pleasure, Melanie.
Visual artist Ella Dreyfus. Ella Dreyfus is also a senior lecturer and the head of public programs at the National Art School in Sydney. If you'd like to access Ella's online gallery of these works, do go to her website, which is elladreyfus.gallery, or find the links on our website.